As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
We got a game day version of the Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable. It is presented by Roundtable Pizza. Commercial free. It really is pizza royalty. We're here for the next hour talking San Diego Padres baseball with your 97.3 The Fan crew. Matt Scraby on the end, farthest from me. Steven Woods, Paul Reindel, Sam Levitt, our pre- and post-game show host in today. Chris Ello right here next to me. And we're matchy-matchy today, Chris. Looking good. And I'm Ben Higgins, and let's start. Obviously, Padres lose last night, but can go for the series win over the San Francisco Giants this afternoon. I'm going to begin with Fernando Tatis Jr. Did show signs the last couple of days of breaking out of his slump, although we still haven't seen a ton of extra base power. One of the things that we talked about on our show this week is whether Mike Schilt should consider shaking up his lineup and moving Fernando Tatis Jr. out of the leadoff spot. So is it time to do so, Paul Reindel? And if so, how would you reorganize the San Diego Padres lineup?
I'm not opposed to the lineup change as of right now. I think we've got enough of a sample size now where it's like, hey, it's time to switch things up. How you switch it up, that's the great debate. You go Luis Arraez. I like the idea, if you're going to switch anything, because I've been so in favor of Fernando at the leadoff like for years now. I mean, we've seen what he can do, and you go, he's the dream leadoff hitter, but it's just not working right now. It's not to say you couldn't switch it back, but I would probably go Jackson Merrill followed by Tatis in the two spot if I was going to make any changes right now.
Chris, do you think that Mike Schilt's been a little stubborn and clinging to his lineup over the last month now, when the offense has not been producing at anywhere near the levels it was earlier in the season?
No, I don't think so. First of all, Jackson Merrill has been struggling almost as bad as Fernando, so I don't know that that's a great idea. I think
it's just the tools that he provides.
I don't disagree with that, for sure. But, I mean, my point is I think everybody goes through slumps. This is a bit of a protracted slump for Fernando, I'd agree. But if you've committed to him being the leadoff hitter, I still think this is a winning ball club, and I think you ride it out with a proven player like Fernando. So I don't like to make changes when I have something that I think is good. And I think what the Padres have is good overall. One individual scuffling doesn't change it for me.
Matt, the Padres had a lot of success in the second half of last season with Luis Arraez batting leadoff. Is that something you would consider going back to right now?
I don't think so, and the reason is because if Fernando's already sad because he's not hitting, or if he's not hitting well, then what is the message going to be sent to him to tell him that he's out of the leadoff spot? And I know that he's a professional and he has to deal with it because the results are the results, but I think you just got to stick with him at the leadoff spot and hope that he gets back on track sooner rather than later.
Woodsy, we've talked about this a lot on our show. You called pretty strenuously earlier in the week for a change. Does Fernando's recent signs of starting to hit make you change your mind at all?
Yes, compounded with how badly Jackson Merrill kind of looks sometimes at the plate, and really how poorly Luis Arraez looks at the plate now.
Everyone's slumping.
Everybody
now,
other than Manny, I think, you know, is slumping right now. So I guess I would have to walk that back a little bit right now, because originally I thought, I was kind of with Paulie, I was like, hey man, switch it up, see what happens. But I don't worry about Fernando's mentals as far as getting moved down in the lineup. It's not like they'd move him down to seven or 8 or 9. That'll mess with a guy. But going from 1 to 2, you're like, all right, I'll hit second. I don't care. More pitches for me to see. Like, I don't think he cares really much about that. I don't think it's an indictment on him. I just think, yes, hey, we're just going to try something new, get a little spark going. I think he'd be fine with it. But who the hell do you put at the top? You know, Jaren Duran would be nice, but they don't have him yet. So I think
yet.
At this point, if you wanted to move Arise down, that's a conversation I'd be willing to have.
We'll get to Jaren Duran in a moment. First, I'll let Sammy, who gives us the lineup every day on the EcoWater SoCal pregame show, give his thoughts on the lineup.
I would be in favor of switching it up a little bit. I think we've seen this offense not really click on all cylinders for a while now. I like Luis Arraez in the leadoff spot. I understand what Fernando brings to that spot, but Fernando, albeit yesterday, 3 hits, his first in over a month with 3 hits, so we'll see if that gets him going. It could, and then we're not having this conversation in a week, but I would be in favor of maybe trying something else. Having, let's say, even if you just flip Luis and Fernando, yeah, you know, see if that gets Luis going. I mean, Luis is batting 283. I think is coming into today, so that's a lot lower than where he's been in his career. Obviously, bottom third of the lineup isn't getting on a ton in front of Fernando. Who knows? If you have some guys on base in front of Fernando a little bit more, maybe that gives him better pitches to hit. So I would not mind it, a little shakeup.
I know it worked last year, but I'm of the mind that Luis Arraez may be the worst possible candidate as a leadoff hitter. He doesn't walk.
We're wearing the same, and we're thinking the same.
He does not walk. He is going to clog up the base paths because he's not fast. He doesn't steal. And then you're putting your dynamic, you know, speedy guys like Tatis and Merrill right behind him, only to hit the wall when he does get on.
The only thing I'll say to counter that even a little, and I know the at-bats haven't been super. I go to his second at-bat of the game where he works the 10-11, you know, 10-11 pitch AB. Imagine that to start a game. One thing I've been noticing is Padres game starts, we come to the plate, first half inning, hey, Logan Webb threw it with 6 pitches. Like, what the hell just happened? Second inning, Manny, blah, blah. 9 pitches. Guys are going deep into the game against the San Diego Padres right now. Number one, because the offense is struggling, but they're aggressive. They're aggressive. They're swinging early counts. What if Luis Arraez can start a game off by getting Robbie Ray to throw 12 pitches in the first at bat?
Yeah.
That's pretty valuable. Now, if he strikes out, if he hits a single, if he hits a weak rollover, that's 12 pitches
down.
But
the problem with the Luis Arraez is if he swings, probably going to put the ball in play. So if he swings at the first pitch, it's a 1-pitch at bat. Maybe it's a single, maybe it's not. Or he can do a statue take.
Which, no, he does the statue take.
Which he does. I don't like the statue take. I mean, at least look like you're going to be a hitter when it's going up there.
I love it.
The statue take? I don't know. I'm starting.
You're souring.
I don't want to say I'm souring. He's a cool guy.
You're sour.
He's fun to watch. Would I invest? They're paying him $14 million.
No.
I certainly would not give him that next year.
I think all the things that Luis does, they're all good if he's hitting 330.
100%. You love the statue take.
But at 280, they don't look nearly as good.
He might be hitting 280, but according to the analytics that they put up on the screen, he's hitting 340 on pitches outside the strike zone, which is good and bad.
Good and bad.
What is he hitting on pitches in the strike zone?
Well, I know. He's better hitting outside the strike zone, but it also shows you that he absolutely really will not take a walk. You almost have to bounce it up there.
He said he wanted to. He said, you know, they want me to, and I want to, and
it's not
happening. It's not happening.
Yeah, I don't mean to be. I'm not a Luis Arraez hater.
I love Luis Arraez.
I think everyone kind of does.
Yeah.
I just don't know that he's
not a leadoff guy,
and I don't know what he is. He's not a cleanup guy. Although that might be the best spot for him, just because if you've got guys on base, he's going to make contact. And I would not invest heavily and long term in him. If you can get a reasonable deal to bring him back, happy to have him. But he's not my priority this offseason. Probably a conversation for another roundtable. It's our San Diego Padres 97.3 The Fan Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Much more pressing concern for the Padres: outfield, left field. And no one denies, even A.J. Preller doesn't deny, his team needs an upgrade. They need another player. The question is, who and when? Let's start with the when, because I think there's two schools of thought on this. Act now, but you're shopping from a very limited range of choices. Not every team is ready to make trades. give up on their season and you know, deal with the San Diego Padres now. But if you add someone now, that's another maybe almost 2 months that you could have having that left fielder who's going to be an upgrade, because almost no one would not be an upgrade in your employ. Or do you wait until more teams fall out of it? You have better options, maybe a lower price tag because there's you know, more supply on the market that brings down the cost. What the timing of this? Woodsy, what do you think the timing should be for A.J. Preller in addressing that left field need?
Sooner the better, honestly. Again, we talked a little bit today. We talked to our buddy Rob Bradford, who's a Boston Red Sox fan and, you know, honk. That's what they are. They're honks. I mean, Red Sox fans are nuts. And the returns I'm seeing for him, I wouldn't trade that for Jesus. Like, they're like, you get Jesus back, you got to give up DeVries, and you got to give up this guy, you get Jesus himself back. I'm like, I'm good. I'll hold on to my prospects. It's fine. I've never seen returns for, like, they're asking the Phillies for Andrew Painter. They're asking the Dodgers for Dalton Rushing and Zaire Hope. He's good. He's not that good. And as Eno Saris pointed out today, he may have peaked already. So
it's 28.
I like the control that you have with
Jaren,
a guy
we're
like
talking about Jaren Duran.
I like the control of Jaren Duran. But, man, you're not getting Leo DeVries from me. You're not getting Salas, more than likely. You're not getting any of my big guys. If you want to make a deal, it's going to be bulk, and it's going to be young and relievers and things like that. The Red Sox are ridiculous because they're wanting to – no, we want to improve the ball club now and go win now and also make room for Roman Anthony. They're depending on four rookies to go out and lead them to the pennant, and I just don't think it's going to happen. So I think maybe you wait out Duran, but they need somebody. They really, really do. I love T-Wade as much as Matt Scraby does, but T-Wade's not your everyday left fielder. Jason Hayward, they're like, oh, he's eligible to come back. Great. We need somebody better out there sooner than later.
Sam, are you of the now, trade now opinion, or wait until the market shifts?
Well, I think, of course, trade now if you can make it happen. I think with Duran in particular, I'm with Woodsy. I think it's a complicated question because I don't know how impactful he really is or not. And again, it depends on what the price point is. Just to take this question, and I'll let everybody else answer about the left field part of it, I do want to say one thing because I see it on social media. You know, this idea of, well, you know, as long as it's not Leo DeVries, that's okay. I just want to say one thing. This whole let's sour on Ethan Salas thing at the age of 19, he turned 19 like 5 days ago.
Yeah.
I find kind of ridiculous.
Yep.
And again, I don't know what Ethan Salas is going to be or not going to be. And I know this is not the question, but it's been bothering me. He just turned 19, mm-hmm. and he was playing pro ball at 16.
They said his floor is a big league catcher for 15 years.
This That's idea his floor. Of, yeah, you know, Salas, whatever. Well, nobody was saying that a year 18 months ago.
Who was it that told you, Woods, that, like, Brad Ausmus?
Yeah,
floor.
I had lunch with a guy the other day, and he goes, this floor is Brad Ausmus. The floor. So the ceiling could be whatever. His floor at a baseline because of his defense, because of his preparation, because of his ability at such a young age to handle a pitching
right.
staff. His floor is Brad Ausmus. I don't want to trade you for Jaren.
And are some of his struggles maybe he got rushed a little bit and
sure.
was playing at double A's first year in pro ball? I don't know.
That's exciting.
Random
maybe
aside,
his struggles where he had a broken back.
Yeah, random aside when we talk about these trades, not that they're not going to move him. Maybe they will.
They may.
But I just like it's been bothering me. I'm like,
there you go. Get it off your chest.
19.
It's all right.
All right, but we'll make it a two-part question, Chris. Act now, wait a little bit, and would you be willing to include either DeVries or Salas in a deal for a player like Jaren Duran?
No, I would not. The fact he's 28 is a big deal. 27 is supposed to be your big season.
It was for him.
It was.
Look
yeah.
at
yeah.
that.
Season.
Right, and yeah, he had so. An amazing season. He is down a little this year, so no. I would not include those guys. I think he can find somebody, and that's why AJ, you know, wears the bucket hat and looks through all of these files and stuff, and I'll let him figure it out. I did throw this out because I think some people think that maybe we could trade for somebody other than a left fielder and put Gavin Sheets in left field and get production. I said this the other day. I don't know if it's this dire, but I think it's irresponsible to put him out in left field anymore.
I think you're right.
And the reason I do is because he had four RBIs last night, And if you put him in left field and he runs into a fence again and he's out for 2 months,
you're toast.
That's irresponsible. So they have to address it. There's no question. I'm going to let AJ figure it out and trust that he'll come up with something.
Matt, trade now. Wait until the market shifts.
This is why Sam and I are mortal enemies, because Sam's talking about me with the whole everybody but DeVries, because now that I've thought about it a little bit, I think you need to wait. I think you need to wait and see how the prices come down. And I don't necessarily think you need a name brand player in left field. I've been saying this name for a couple weeks now, and it will probably never happen, but the Blue Jays left fielder, Nathan Lucas, he's affordable. He has control on his contract. He's decent. You don't need to trade these big name prospects or get someone that is a huge name in left field. You just need someone that works.
I have never, because anybody's an upgrade right now. That's the beauty of it, is that like I said on the air, Ben is an upgrade. You're an upgrade right now over what they're running out there.
I have never seen somebody get so influenced by one series as I've seen Matt Scraby get influenced by Nathan Lucas after that series.
I don't protect Scraby ever. But he said Nathan Lucas's name before that series.
Okay. Oh, okay. Before that series.
He did.
I'm giving him
the benefit of that.
I've said this to Scraby off air.
No, he has. He has. And I know it's ridiculous to say Nathan Lucas.
Bro, I'll give you somebody for Bailey Falter right now. I'm in love with that guy after the Pirates series. It happens, man.
Pauly, now or later, would you include Salas or DeVries in a trade?
The Second World War is the largest event in human history. A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, I'm a little surprised. I'm kind of on an island here, because I'm going to give you five letters, A-S-A-F-P. Like, you have to... I guess maybe I'm just different a little bit.
What's that stand for,
Pauly? I can't tell you. I'll tell you after the show. I go year to year. I don't care about the future. I don't care about prospects. I really don't. What are you doing for me now? Where are we at this year? I want to win this year. I think our window of championship contention is closing very quickly. It could very well reopen if you hang on to Salas and DeVries, and then you have a Tatis and Merrill combo with them. But the team as currently constructed, with Xander, who's only getting older, and Manny, who's only getting older, who knows if Darvish ever throws again, Joe Musgrove getting... Everybody's getting older. Your window of contention is closing. This is a all-in, I think... The Padres, more than any other team in baseball, must win. This is your year. You got so close last year. Don't wait. Go out and get a left fielder, because you have a gauntlet of a schedule coming up. You don't have a whole lot of time. Who knows what their record is after the end of at the end of June? Go get a pitcher. I don't care about prospects. Nobody's untouchable. They say they are. They're not, because if the Yankees called and said, you know, this Aaron Judge guy, it's not really working out. We're going to eat 75% of his contract if you'll give us DeVries. See you later, Leo. Like, nobody's fully untouchable. So it's got to be the right move. I think 2 years of control for Duran, one that we're using. So two or three years, like, fine. Get him for 3 years. You have an everyday left fielder who you know at least has a history, a good track record. And then after 3 years, let him go. He's gone. You don't have to.
I wish my producer of my show came up with interesting takes like that.
Well, that was good, they're Paul. Interesting, but I pretty much disagree.
Nathan Lucas, Chris.
Yes,
no,
I know.
No offense, because Paul brings up good points, but I pretty much disagree with everything you just said.
I'm not surprised. I wish I had a host that agreed with me.
Keep your ears open, and if there's a trade that makes sense, go ahead and pull it off. I'm not opposed to making a move now, but... Don't overpay. Now, you're doing fine. I mean, you're playing good. You know, you're winning series without a left fielder right now. You can wait it out until a better deal presents itself.
Can they?
Maybe go out and pick up someone, you know, on the cheap. Travis Jankowski just got released again.
Oh, my God.
Not for the rest of the season. You'd still be looking to make a trade. I'm talking about a Band-Aid for a month. And then go ahead and get someone who's good when the market is much richer in terms of options when you get closer to the trade deadline and teams are out of it and they're willing to get anything because they know they're going to lose this guy at the end of the year. Don't overpay now, though. You're playing okay. And don't just make a move because you're not desperate to make a move. They'll take advantage of you when they sense the desperation.
I'm excited. I'll go to the wall for you. I like it, man. I like that he's going all in. I still like that thinking sometimes.
I'm excited for Tucker Barnhart, Travis Jankowski, and Hunter Renfro ASAP, guys. We can get it done with those.
If you've been released, we got a spot for you.
We got a spot for you.
God. It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable. It is presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Some concerning news out of the game last night as Xander Bogaerts leaves early with a sore shoulder. Still waiting for more details, but he did say kind of felt like it did last year when he was dealing with the broken shoulder for months.
Is the lineup out today?
I have not seen a lineup out. He said,
yes, it is.
Is Xander Bogaerts in the Padres lineup? I'm going to
guess not. Xander Bogaerts is not in the lineup.
Yeah, it's not surprising. He said he probably needs at least a couple of days to get going again.
Iglesias shortstop today.
So with Xander, and we talked about this a little bit this morning, actually turned back and forth that we've had in a while on Ben and Woods. I think we can all agree that it's hard to ever envision him becoming the player that he was with the Boston Red Sox, the one that the Padres paid $280 million to acquire over 11 years. So the question I asked is, what did A.J. Preller and the Padres get wrong when they signed Xander Bogaerts? What did they miss, Chris, when they made that decision to bring him for that price tag into this organization?
Yeah, maybe they didn't see the green monster. It seemed like he had an affinity for blasting the ball off the green monster.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah. And those are outs now for Xander. So I don't know exactly, you know, bat speed, and you can give me all of those F-war things. You know, I just think that he took it. I think Fenway Park fit his swing and his style perfectly, and I don't think Petco Park's worked for him, and I think that now, you know, it's been such a long time since he's been that Xander Bogaerts that I think he forgot how to be that Xander Bogaerts.
We have this Xander Bogaerts now.
Right, he's this Xander Bogaerts. That one's so long gone, I don't think he can get it back. But that's my only take. I don't know exactly because I don't go that analytically deep on it.
And, Sammy, I'm not calling for them to get rid of Xander Bogaerts.
You can't.
He still can be a valuable piece of this team, but I don't ever see him being 25 home run, MVP. You know, he was a top three MVP guy with the Boston Red Sox. And even if you anticipated decline over his 30s in his career, you were still hoping that the first 4 or 5 years would look pretty darn good, and they haven't even gotten that. What did they miss?
Look, let me preface this by saying I'm a Xander fan. He's a great guy. On paper, he, you know, should be a guy that can provide winning qualities, a two-time World Series winner. And much like you guys, I've been waiting for that Boston version to show up, and it just hasn't. So to answer your question, or to try to answer your question about what did they miss, I don't know if they missed anything, but I think you do have to wonder a little bit, you know, is there something physically with him that just isn't right? Is that wrist bothering him
more than shoulder
now, but, you know, in the couple of years past? Because to me, it's just, it's been so much not like the Boston Xander that it leaves you searching for explanations as to, okay, what is it? And maybe it's just physically, or maybe he's, you know, just as he gets to 30 and beyond, you know, physically isn't the same guy for whatever reason. So I wish I had an answer. I don't have a great one.
Would you passionately kind of argue the Padres didn't miss anything? They got what they knew they were getting.
Splash. And, yeah. They got a splash. That's what they wanted. They want a splash. They wanted a splash that offseason. They got it. Our beloved owner, Peter Seidler, was spending money, and I love that. I love him for it. I got excited about the move because I get excited about every move. I got excited about G-Man Choi. I was like, look at this guy. This guy can hit. I get excited when we add new pieces.
Adam Frazier, come on in.
Dude, the guy's leading the league in hitting. This guy's going to rake here. Problem is, I don't even know that they, as an organization, have figured out who the best pieces are to hit at Petco Park, because Xander Bogaerts certainly isn't the makeup of that guy. When Luis Arraez hits, what's he hitting at Petco? Like 210, 212? Luis Arraez can't hit at the home ballpark in which he plays. We've missed all of that. Who is the best person, the best profile that hits at our ballpark here? Fill your team with those guys, and I think you'll be fine. But as far as Xander goes, I will say this. I said it today. I think people misinterpreted what I said. He's actually a pretty good shortstop this year. He's playing pretty good shortstop. His range is far, far superior to the guy that's starting at shortstop for him today. So then they said, was he? Well, at least Jose Iglesias rakes. Number one, he doesn't. Xander's actually a better hitter than Jose Iglesias today. I like Jose Iglesias. Great bench piece. Saved our ass the other night. Won that game for us single-handedly. I love him. I love him. But sometimes it's like, man, be careful what you wish for, because Xander was actually playing okay and playing good shortstop for you. Him being out of the lineup, okay, we'll see, man. Guys can step up now. But, you know, losing Xander Bogaerts, I don't think helps us today.
Yeah,
I really
Paul,
don't.
Paul, if his name wasn't Xander Bogaerts, he wasn't making that kind of money, I don't think the Padres fans would give him that much of a thought. They'd go, hey, we got a solid veteran shortstop there. No?
I disagree with that, because Jake Cronenworth gets a lot of crap.
He does.
Because he signed a big contract, which, in the grand scheme of things, pretty average contract for a guy that's an everyday infielder. What is it, $11 million a year? And people are still like, you should never have given Cronenworth that contract. And I don't even disagree with that, because I was confused as to why they gave Jake Cronenworth that extension when they did. Kind of felt like he just got rewarded for an NLDS double, which was awesome. Great moment. Not worth $70 million. But I'm just saying, if Xander was making $70 million, he'd absolutely still be getting flack. So I would disagree with that.
If he's making Tyler Wade money, he wouldn't.
Yeah,
you know, that's
right,
about
right.
It. Tyler Wade,
he's an MVP, though. Yeah, right. You know, fans will never let me forget that.
I loved it. I thought it was Wade great.
Yeah, you can make a case.
With Xander, it's just like, look, nobody, don't be mistaken. He was not, he wasn't the first choice in the that 2022 offseason. He was the third
settled.
Choice.
He settled.
And Peter Seidler and AJ Preller and their crew, they decided we're going for a splash, as you called it. They tried to get Aaron Judge. Didn't happen. They tried to get Trey Turner. It didn't happen. And AJ said, I'm not leaving empty-handed. Or Peter said, we're not leaving empty-handed.
Championship and, pedigree, we're going to get him. He's going to bring in that championship and pedigree to the clubhouse.
Then they overbid by like $100 million to get Xander Bogaerts. They were not leaving without a big, flashy signing. And it just... it didn't make sense at the time. I was excited, like Woods. I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. I said it this morning. I was excited when they signed Eric Hosmer, because I get excited when Jeff Passan posts, breaking news, Padres agree to long-term contract with blank. It gets me excited.
We love new players.
We love it, but we didn't need it. We were like, oh, another shortstop.
Yeah.
Okay, this should
that's
be interesting.
That's what they missed, man. They that's what they missed. They missed.
And we all knew that at the time, Matt. We all did shows about... yeah, another shortstop. We're going to have to move Tatis. Ironically, that may have been the best thing for Fernando Tatis, is get him out of the infield and get him to be a platinum glove outfielder. But I don't think that was their thinking necessarily when
that's
they made
Xander's
the
best contribution to the Padres, forcing Fernando to right field.
I mean, I've defended Xander, and I will defend Xander, but it's been hard to watch this year at the plate. I mean, he has the most infield singles in baseball right now, and that is not a title I think that he wants to have. It's a surprise when he gets the ball in the air. It's a surprise when he gets the ball out of the infield.
Into a gap.
It's crazy. I don't know what... I mean, maybe he is injured, because we talked to Rob Bradford before the season, and he said he was, like, thinking the wrist could be an issue for the rest of his career because it's always bothered him. But the Padres... I don't know what they missed, but I told Kirk Kenny yesterday, we're going to have a special one year or one day, and it's going to we're going to find out why they signed Xander Bogaerts and why they paid all that money, because it's a mystery. I don't understand it at all.
Well, I think it's pretty easy to figure out why they did it, even if they overpaid. AJ likes big talent. Xander was a big talent in Boston. I also think you have to put into context where they were, coming off the NLCS appearance, coming off beating the Dodgers. Remember how exciting that stretch was from the winter meetings, into
like
Fan
it.
Fest,
context,
having Juan
matters.
Soto, World Series expectations. I think you have to put it in the context of where the Padres were at that very moment.
Wasn't AJ Preller a shiny object guy just a couple of years ago? So to me, like, this is a move. There's no way he would have made now.
Agreed.
Because it seems like he's matured a little bit.
Agreed.
And now he's getting Nick Pivetta's and Gavin Sheets.
Brilliant.
The best two free agents in baseball are the best values in baseball.
And speaking of Nick Pivetta and Gavin Sheets, next topic, All-Star voting is now open at MLB.com. A little early for the discussion, but if they're going to ask fans, I can certainly ask you guys your opinion about the Padres players and their All-Star chances. And Sammy, you tweeted about Gavin Sheets and his All-Star candidacy. He's having a great first half. Now, he's on the ballot at DH, which is not a great spot to be in the National League right now.
When I tweeted that, I didn't even look at where he
was. Yeah, because of a guy named Shohei Ohtani and a guy named Kyle Schwarber and a guy named Seiya Suzuki and Christian Yelich. And it's going to be tough to actually make it as a DH in the NL, but there should be some Padres on this All-Star team.
For sure. And the fact that it's based on at least somewhat fan voting, obviously the Padres have a lot of big name stars. So look, with Gavin Sheets, is he going to be an All-Star? Probably not. But has he been an All-Star on this team? Absolutely. I mean, he's got 38 RBIs after yesterday. The ironic thing, and Woodsy, I think you said this a little bit earlier, you tweeted it out, something like that. Every time he has a huge game, the Padres don't win, which is the ironic part of it. But what more could you have wanted from Gavin Sheets? Again, context matters. He walked into spring training on a minor league deal, kind of a cast off from the White Sox, hits a bunch of home runs. If he doesn't go on that home run barrage, who knows if he makes the team?
No doubt.
Pretty good story, regardless.
Woods, you've been the biggest Manny Machado supporter since even before he arrived in San Diego. This should be the year that he starts at third base the National League. Nolan Arenado is no longer a factor. It really comes down to him or Eugenio Suarez when you look at the numbers. Suarez has 16 homers, 44 runs batted in, but only a .227 average. Manny, much more complete player and having a really good season. I would love to see San Diego and the Padres get all in on let's vote Manny in as the starting all-star third baseman for the National League push this year.
Yeah, you can rest assured I will be voting for him every day as many times as I can. He absolutely deserves it this year. Play he made last night. I mean, just insane. He's an insane player. And again, it's one of those deals where it's like, he's got his detractors, certainly. He's got his super fans. He's got his blind fans like me. I'm blind to it, whatever. But when he goes, whoever the next guy is, that's when it'll hurt you. You'll see it, and you'll go, oh, my God, what did I have? What did I have for so many years in San Diego? That's when it's really going to sting. But as far as All-Stars go, Benny, Robert Suarez is an All-Star to me. Manny Machado's an All-Star. I think Fernando has a good chance of getting in because he's Fernando. There's some tough competition out there in right field as well. I know the fall-off has been pretty gnarly, but he's got time. He can turn it around.
I think, Chris, the outfield is kind of interesting, too. For my money, Pete Crow Armstrong and Corbin Carroll are both vastly deserving. Now, 3 weeks ago, Fernando Tatis Jr. would have been the easy third choice. Now I think he's kind of in a competition with the rest of them. Perhaps the name will help him out. He's certainly not an all-star, but this one's going to be a little tougher to decide, I think, for the rest of the country.
Yeah, and Jackson Merrill was a starter last year, too, right? So we had two. And Jackson has tailed off considerably here. It's almost like he's been overlooked in his tail off because Fernando's, for some reason, has garnered more attention. I agree with Woodsy, though. I think Suarez and Manny's got to be it. And Span of the Mac, Manny can win every award in the National League as long as they don't give him the gold glove. I've decided to change my tact on this. Instead of begging for him to get the deserved gold glove,
beg that he doesn't.
I'm going to say, he's got too many errors this year. Let's take him out of consideration, even though he makes every incredible play.
Yeah.
But it is going to be interesting in the National League. Plus, the fans don't always get it right.
No,
so I'm not going to worry too much about this. But yes, PCA. Corbin Carroll, what a comeback for him. Mm-hmm. So last year he was in the sophomore slump of all time.
Scraby, I am going to be mad if the NL voters in their wisdom do send Nolan Arenado back to the All-Star game this year, though.
Yeah,
really.
He's
really
on my fantasy team.
Or Max Muncy.
You should drop
or Max Muncy. That would be even worse. Thank you for that suggestion.
Is it Max Muncy pre-glasses or post-glasses?
He's heating up, man. That's not a good thing for us.
Yeah, there's only really one or two choices in my mind, Robert Suarez and Manny Machado. Fernando, obviously, he could turn it around here in the next couple of weeks, but Jackson Merrill, I don't think, is there. I think that he's tailed off way too much since he came back from his injury for the fans to vote him in, fans outside of San Diego to vote him in.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. On our show today, what says, you're not doing another one of those drafts,
oh,
are you?
No.
I said, but we always do one.
Love the draft.
You don't have to.
How do you
this
not
one,
love the draft?
The snake, I hate the
this
snake.
This one is fun and easy. I'm not going to even make you necessarily compete for the good choices this week, because it's also kind of our seventh inning stretch question as well. And I'm
all
stealing
right.
this.
That's easy.
And it is somewhat baseball related, but I'm stealing it from last night's television broadcast, because they asked, I think Scan asked Don and Mudd, ooh, if you could have dinner with any figure, past or present, in baseball history, who would you want to have dinner with and why? And here is the order that I've randomly come up with today. It is Paul, Scraby, me, Woods, Chris, and then Sam with the final pick. So, Paul, we're putting you on the
can't
spot.
Can't repeat, though, still?
Is you still can't repeat? Well, yeah, that's kind of still the rule in effect. I mean, are we all picking the same person? We have an entire range of humanity, yes, almost to choose from here. But, you know. Paul, you get to go first.
All right. First, I also say Robert Suarez and Manny Machado for the All-Star game.
All right, thank you. Sorry.
So, wait a minute. You don't want to make make a case for A. Eugenio Suarez? I think it's almost blasphemous to mention him and Manny in the same.
I know.
I know he's hit the home runs, but come on.
I guess I just him? On the All-Star game, I do think the All-Star game was designed for a Fernando Tatis Jr., somebody like him. Right. So I would hope that he does get there, even with the numbers.
Paulie, by the way, has told me in the past, never feel bad if you skip over
that's
me.
That's true. He did say that.
I said that like the first one.
That's true.
And now he likes it. He wants
so
it.
For the draft, yes. I would say I'm going to go more historical. They're no longer with us. But if I could go back in time and have dinner and go out a night on the town, it would be Mickey Mantle.
Ooh,
oh man,
that one is of the best players of all time.
Intriguing night.
One of my favorite historical players that I like, you know, did book reports on in school. Yep. And then the off the field fun that you would have with Mickey Mantle. Sign me up.
You keep up? You can handle it.
I was going
to
say,
you
think you can keep up?
I don't think you can keep up.
I couldn't keep up,
man.
But I could.
Some of those stories are off.
I could try
one night to try, though. Even Ben, even Tame Ben, might be interested in at least trying for one night with the Mick on the town in New York City back in the 1950s.
I mean, can you even imagine?
I can't wrap my head around.
I can't.
Scraby, how is your dinner with Tyler Wade going to go?
No, it's going to be amazing. Tyler Wade.
What's wrong with the Blue Jays left fielder?
Yeah. I could go with like an obvious one, Babe Ruth, but he might be too drunk to have a conversation.
But you'd get hot dogs.
Yes. Joe DiMaggio, I'm going to go with, because he was one of those guys who was more famous than anyone in the world at a certain point.
You just want to rub elbows with Maryland, yeah. Right?
That wouldn't hurt either. Okay. I would be like, yeah, invite her to dinner too. We could all have a conversation. I'll be the third wheel here. But yeah, Joe DiMaggio.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I think I want to have a fun dinner. I want to laugh. I want to have a good time. We lost him actually fairly recently. I'd love to have dinner with Bob Uecker.
Oh,
just hear stories.
Mine.
Good one. Good
just
one.
Just hear stories all night of his days in baseball and probably laugh my head off. I think that would be a really good time.
Damn it.
Although when I met him in person, he was a little intimidating, actually.
Yeah?
You know, he came
who was more intimidating, him or Bobby Knight?
Oh, Bobby Knight was the most
that's still my all-time favorite story.
What about Goose Gossage?
Goose was fun. I didn't mind Goose. He may have called me a nerd and made me feel a little unsafe, but I'll take Goose over Bobby Knight any day of the week. I'd rather have dinner with Goose than interview Bobby Knight again, if I had to.
I think you'd rather go to the dentist with Goose than interview Bobby
Knight. Woodsy, sorry that I stole your pick right in front of you. I didn't know that I was going to do that. Of all the people in baseball, we were going to pick the same person?
Yeah, Bob Uecker's pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to take Uecker.
I think we would all sign up for that.
I've heard a couple stories on the Artie Lang podcast, some stories that you told. I mean, it's ungodly listening. If you can go look it up today, it will make your day. Just how funny and really wild that dude was back in the day. I don't know, man. Bambino, he's still on the table?
He's still on the board.
You know what? I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I always enjoyed hearing the stories about him on Ken Burns' baseball. I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to go with Satchel Paige. Could tell you some stories, probably some you don't want to hear, to be honest with you. But made his major league debut at what?
53
years old?
Yeah. Maybe older.
My son asked me the other day, who's the oldest person, Dad, to ever play in the big leagues? And I said, it's Satchel Paige.
And I think they didn't even really know his age. So he could have been any age.
Could have been 60.
Age, really.
But all the stories I've read about him, all the stories that I've heard, just seems like what a fascinating life in the game.
Chris, you get to have dinner with anybody in baseball history.
Well, I think you got to mention, I got to go too, because I got to steal a little part of what Wood said. I think Jackie Robinson, for the historical perspective, and I don't know that any of us can believe what he really must have gone through.
No doubt.
And it'd be interesting, from my perspective, to see what that was really like. I'd probably be horrified. But I'm going to choose Yogi Berra.
Oh, good.
For the same reasons that you take Bob Uecker. Plus, I want to feel really smart for a while. And I think Yogi would say some silly things that would make me feel better.
I wonder if the reality matched the mysticism of the Yogi Berra's.
Yeah,
was he really constantly saying things
right.
like
did
that?
He just, or? Did he just come up with them one after another?
I mean, if a person came up with one or two of those in their lifetime, you go, that's amazing. He's like,
he had 100 of them.
100 yeah. of them.
Joe Garagiola's another fun guy. Mm-hmm. Tell you a story. Sorry, Sam, I took three.
Yeah, well, Sam, you've got the rest of baseball to choose from.
Yeah, I'll stay on the broadcaster side as well, and Uecker was a great answer. Joe Garagiola, I think, did a lot of broadcast too. I'll go with Vin Scully. Absolute legend.
Great stories.
I think all of us.
Pretty good night
everybody,
out.
Yeah, everybody around baseball has tremendous respect for him. I mean, I would love to talk to him just about the Brooklyn days and what an amazing career and all the things he saw. I never had a chance to meet him. So I would go with Vin Scully. What an amazing storyteller that would be.
You know, I was thinking I might save this for a future roundtable, but since you brought it up, we have a few minutes here to play with. I was curious, why did all of you want to get into sports broadcasting to begin with? If you even did. I'm not sure Woods ever really pictured that as his course.
No.
He ended up there. But, like, Chris, why did you want to get into this field?
I could almost use the same answer that Sam just gave. Vin Scully. I don't know. Just listening to ball games. That's enough for me. You know, growing up in L.A., Vin Scully, Chick Hearn, Dick Enberg, and Bob Miller's the hockey guy that people don't know, but I certainly did. Those were my heroes, I guess, for whatever reason. And so I wanted to be like all of them.
Yeah, for me, I listened to Jerry Coleman, and I would, like, I can picture myself on a Sunday afternoon outside, radio there, like throwing a tennis ball against the wall as I'm listening to the game, and I'm kind of imagining it all in my head going on while I'm doing it, and them painting the picture and just the excitement of this thing, like the microphone and the audience and how thrilling and it must be, the adrenaline you get when you know you're talking to all the entire city is listening to your voice and it's a big moment is going on. I think I just always found that appealing. Now, Paul, you didn't grow up down here. You grew up in the Pacific Northwest. Why did you want to get into sports broadcasting?
Well, you said Jerry Coleman. I have another Jerry, but it's not the one you're thinking of. It's Jerry Maguire, actually. I was about 7 years old when Jerry Maguire came out, and I wanted to be a sports agent. I still wanted to be a baseball player or a basketball player, and then, everybody else in my grade hit puberty and just lapped me athletically, and I realized, if I could play like community college, maybe like that could still be on the table, but I'm not going anywhere in professional sports, so I'll go back to the Jerry Maguire and be a sports agent. Then I realized you got to go to a lot of law school and do all that. I go, that's probably not for me either. Mm-hmm. But I did want to do something in sports, but it did start. I wanted to be a sports agent.
Does Paul know that
I was just about to bring this up,
a cameo in that movie?
Did you?
Yes, yeah, I don't think I did know that. 5 minutes of the movie,
Chrisello,
my voice.
Chris Ello is when they're driving in the car.
Pretty clear.
Sports talk radio.
Really?
It's unmistakable.
On his way to the airport?
No,
he was sitting on a bus. And actually, he's sitting on a bus. My voice is his conscience at the time. And it was a line that I said to Lee Steinberg, who I was interviewing.
Yeah.
And Cameron Crowe was following Lee Steinberg around for this movie. And I asked, or I told Lee Steinberg, I go, how do you live with yourself? You're not like that, but the reason that these salaries are so high in the first place.
Amazing.
So when Jerry Maguire sitting on the bus at the very beginning, his conscience, they play me saying that as
it's
if
there.
I'm gonna that's go back him. And watch I gotta, this.
Well, my kids love it. We watch it once a week in our house. We absolutely
when
love
he's
it.
On the bus at the beginning, the very beginning of the movie. Listen,
it's quick.
Now,
but
just
you hear
for
it.
The record, I do fast forward to the Kelly Preston part.
I was gonna say,
please don't ever
slow down next time, just for a second.
I fast forward through that. Just
do you get. You
I got bubkas for that.
No royalty.
You're in a Cameron Crowe movie, though. That's
I didn't
pretty
even,
badass.
I didn't even know I was in the movie till the guys at the old 690 told me that they agreed to let them use my voice without even
that's
asking
so cool.
me about
that's amazing.
We were
I,
watching
I can't
like Winning Time, and they had, was it Mason in Ireland from LA? Like, they got to be the sports talk radio guys in the background.
Sure.
We're like, how cool would that be?
Yeah, it's a highlight. It's a highlight.
That's I was awesome. In a Dodgers Blake Snell hype video.
Yeah, you were.
Okay.
yeah, you were.
So funny,
Matt. Why'd you get into this this business?
I've been a radio nerd forever. I like grew up with the radio in my bed, going to bed listening to certain baseball games, John Miller, guys like that. But Joe Starkey was also a huge reason that I am in radio, because he just reminds me of 49ers football, like as a kid. And every time I hear his voice and hear his calls, it just like gives me goosebumps, because I can remember where I was as a kid. But I mean, I didn't expect to be in sports radio. I thought I was going to be in a different type of radio, but I'm very happy to have found myself here. And one of the shows that Woods previously worked on was the reason, really the reason that I'm in radio, is because they made everything seem so fun and so awesome that I had to be a part of that.
It's all BS. All of it.
You're actually, you two are more alike than I maybe
no doubt.
I thought. Woods is kind of a secret radio nerd as well.
Oh, not even secret.
It's not secret.
The reason once I got the opportunity to do this that I wanted to stay in it was because of a guy named Mike Reiner from Dallas. Radio Jesus is what I call him. Got to have lunch with him a couple years ago. And is my inspiration really every day. The show he put on in Dallas called The Hardline is sports radio the way I like to do it. We're having a lot of fun talking about life, talking about other things other than X's and O's and other than, you know, the minutia of the grind of sports. Have fun. Talk about music. Talk about movies. Talk about your family, whatever. I've taken his model. I've stolen it. I told him I stole it. He gave me permission to steal it. It tickles him to death. He always says, I'm so tickled that you stole my show and put it on in San Diego. I said, I sure did. And he's the reason, you know, that I once I got the opportunity to do sports radio, you remember I pitched you the vision and you thought I was a lunatic. So
we had
that hasn't changed.
That has not changed.
That was, 2018 when you came over to Sports Talk Radio. And we sent you to the Super Bowl a few months later.
Radio Row.
The only good part
Chris
of that trip.
Radio Row.
And we surprised you.
Only when it was here.
Yeah. Me and Ben were back here in San Diego. You were the only one there.
Yeah.
And I found Mike Reiner's phone number.
Sent him over.
Texted him. He said, I'm actually feeling under the weather. I'm not doing my show today. I'm in my hotel room. And I told him, and I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. And he
What's
found
us
it.
To care?
He's like, oh, wait, this guy's that big of a. I was like, I got to go meet him.
Yep.
So
That's
Mike
awesome.
Reiner went down while you were on the air, and you're like, oh, my God, you guys, Mike Reiner just walked away. And I'm like, no, he's actually here to talk to you.
Yeah,
man.
It's crazy, man.
The problem with sending Woods to Radio Row, though, is that he
you don't have to tell this story.
Yeah, you
again.
Do. That every guest that come by, of course, was pitching something.
Right.
And he thought that had to be the entire topic of the interview. And I told him, Woods, at the end, one question at the end about the product they're pitching. But he'd like leave
tell
with
me
it
about your CBD water.
Follow up about it. And like another question, I'm going, ask him about football or something, not about CBD water the entire
beef
time.
Beef jerky.
So, Merrill Hodge, tell me why concussions aren't real. Okay. Tell me again why CTE isn't a thing.
I remember going to Radio Row. Tony Gonzalez wouldn't start the interview until we mentioned Mexico avocado.
That's it, buddy. I hate it.
He would not start until we got the sponsor mentioned.
Never
out of the
again.
Way.
Never avocado. Again will I go.
Mexico. All right, Sam, you kind of inspired this discussion, so you wrap it up. Why'd you get into sports broadcasting?
Well, I think subconsciously it was always there for me. I grew up listening to WFAN and Z100 in New York. I can remember listening to Steve Summers late at night on my clock radio in my room when I was a kid.
Legendary.
Yeah, so it was always there. Now, I went to college. I was pre-med when I got to Northwestern.
What?
Yeah.
I did not know this. Mm-hmm. Dr. Levitt.
Was not in the School of Journalism. And got involved at the student radio station. And I think, like many of us, caught the buzz. I can remember vividly the first time I was on the radio, the first talk show I did called The Sports Voice on WNUR.
Yes. I need the audio.
And I actually, on my Instagram, I put up something from the TV station.
I saw it. Yeah. Incredible.
It's pretty bad. But had that buzzed feeling coming out of the studio, and I was awful, obviously. But yeah, got that feeling, and that feeling never left.
We just saw your lovely mother a few days ago.
Yes.
How did you break the news to her that you were leaving pre-med to go into sports?
Samuel. You know what? They were, I think, a little concerned.
There goes my golden years.
They were concerned but supportive. Concerned but supportive is how I would put my parents' reaction that I wanted to go into the school in journalism after my freshman year.
What was your specialty you were thinking of? Or just...
Well, I don't know. I didn't really get that far. Now, I was an EMT in high school, riding ambulances. Yeah.
Wow.
Worked at Citi Field for a couple of summers on the medical
you
staff.
You are a mystery.
Yeah.
Learned I got some so stories. Much. All right, last few minutes of our roundtable brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Before our next roundtable, seems kind of crazy. The Padres will have played their first three games against the Los Angeles Dodgers. So, after we have seen the Padres stay with the Dodgers, game bow to first place at this recording, do you now realize or believe it is a realistic goal to win the NL West, Chris, as opposed to what we all kind of thought at the beginning is, hey, we'll just take a while, just get into the playoffs. Is the NL West now a realistic goal for the Padres?
I think so. But I thought so all season. I also think that the Dodgers are really hurting as well, and I think that that's opened up the window of opportunity. The Padres being 10 games over 500 is good, but I expected the Dodgers by now to at least be 20 games over 500. The fact that the Padres are just a game back, I don't see why they can't stay close all season long.
Woods, is the door open for the Padres to take a division title?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had 14 guys coming off the IL that could all, you know, hit 97 miles an hour. I mean, I think once they get their pitching back in order, I think, you know, things will even out for them. We can't win the division if our offense keeps playing like this. There's no chance. Zero. None.
Matty, can the Padres win the NL West now?
Yes and no. I think you're right, Woods, is that when they get their guys back, it's just going to start falling into place. Put them in the playoffs, totally different thing.
Sure.
But it's kind of exciting to see the Padres this close to the top of the division this late in the year.
Well, why is it that when we talk about the Padres, it's always if Yu Darvish comes back and if Michael King is okay? But with the Dodgers, of course, it's when their guys come back, and inevitably they're going to be just as good as they were before. It's not just like it's not guaranteed for the Padres.
Because they have
it's
so
not,
many.
Because it's a numbers game.
They will fill out a rotation.
The Padres, though, and I think this is true, the Padres have gotten much better work out of the guys that they have asked to come up.
No
Kolek,
question.
Burgert, Randy Vasquez, than the Dodgers have gotten out of the guys that they're asking to come up, the Landon Knacks and other pitchers that they are hoping to get them through to the finish line. And that is an advantage that the Padres have had over the LA Dodgers this year.
Yeah. Yeah, so far, though. I mean, and again, you know, I know for a fact they're load managing. They're load managing. Glasnow's fine. Glasnow could pitch today. Blake Snell could pitch tonight. No question about it. They're saving these guys for when they feel it matters most, and that is late August, September, October. They know, looking at their lineup, we're good. They know, looking at their bullpen, the guys they've got coming back in their pen are really nasty. They're signing everyone. They just signed Urania. They signed another pitcher. Traded for Alexis Diaz. Like, they're throwing stuff at the wall right now. They're going to be good. Their pitching is going to come back, and it's going to be nasty. But, yeah, like, those guys could throw tonight. Make no mistake about it.
Paulie, can the Padres realistically win the NL West?
They have a non-zero chance, but I still think I agree with what everyone pretty much saying. Like, the Dodgers are going to figure it out. I'm staying with the just get in to the dance. Because like Scraby said, you get in the playoffs, man. We know firsthand anything can happen. I just think there's just still too much talent in that organization for anybody to even hang with them much longer. And then especially over the course of the rest of the season, I think they're going to probably still run away with it.
Sammy?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're a game out. I think, obviously, the Dodgers, this is probably their floor with what they're doing right now because of all the injuries. I'm with you, Woodsy. I think if the Padres are going to win it, they got to start playing better overall. This discussion, we had it on your show about the Padres winning games despite you feel like not really playing that well, and maybe they would disagree with that, but it certainly feels from a fan standpoint like they're not playing that well. They're going to have to start playing collectively, especially offensively, a lot better in order for that to happen, and maybe it will.
If they're going to have a chance at the end of the season, and I do think they have a chance, I think it's critical that they make it a two-horse race.
Oh,
that means taking care of business against the Giants, starting with, you know, winning this series, and, you know, taking care of business when they start playing the Diamondbacks. Don't let the Diamondbacks start climbing back into the race. If they can make it a two-horse race against the Dodgers, then it comes down to a head-to-head series. Padres did well against the Dodgers last year. If they catch them still down early in the season, they might have a legitimate shot to win the NL West. But if it's a four-horse race at the end of the year and you're trying to fight off wild card contenders at the same time, that might be too much to ask. The Dodgers probably, that would be in their advantage if everybody's just jockeying below them. But if they can make it a two-horse race, I don't think that the Padres have that bad of a shot to win the NL West at the end of the year.
And you have seven games against them in the next week. Hey.
Yeah, thank you, Major League Baseball, for allowing us to finally play the Dodgers.
You want to win the division? Nice opportunity to go take a lead in the division the next week.
No doubt.
All right, well, thank you all for joining us. If you missed any of this, of course, you can go back and find it on all of our channels at 97.3 The Fan. We got Padres Baseball for you live coming up with Sammy Levitt. More work today with a 12:45 first pitch, 11:45 EcoWater SoCal pregame show coming up. For our cast of characters, Matt Scraby, Stephen Woods, Paul Reindl, Sam Levitt, Chris Ello, star of Jerry Maguire, I'm Ben Higgins. Thanks for joining us on the San Diego Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. We'll talk to you next week.
On my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich, we're getting down to the truth behind the names that you know and love. Unfiltered conversations with legends like Leanne Morgan, Kathy Griffin, Ricky Lake, to find out when they feel the most on par. We're breaking it down with Don Lemon, Aaron Parnas, Bomani Jones, laughing it up with Josh Johnson, Dan Soder, many more. You know, the results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.